Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jürgen, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to Town Hall conference call. All lines have been placed on hold to prevent any background noise. If you should need assistance during the call, please press star and the number zero on your telephone keypad, and an operator will come back to assist you. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Judy Ricker. You may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining the Trust Company's quarterly investment call. As a reminder, information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities product, service, or investment strategy. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Consult your financial advisor, tax professional, or attorney before implementing any strategy or recommendation discussed during this call. And now I'd like to welcome Wes McCann, president of our Naples division, the Naples Trust Company. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Judy. Thanks so much for that introduction. I'd like to also welcome Ian Bruch, chief investment officer, and Tim Vick, director of research. They'll be answering today's questions. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Wes.
All right. Well, you know, we have plenty to cover, so let's dive in. So, Tim, we've had a lot of up and down churning in the markets lately. Can you give an overall perspective on what's moving financial markets right now?
I think churning has been a good word to describe it, Wes. It's been a little dicey for clients ever since the market started selling off in February. It's been climbing back, but you know, overall, it has been a very solid trend and a very positive one. In fact, I think the market just closed a couple of minutes ago, less than a half a percent off its all-time high. So, you know, a lot of the news and the noise that's been created has really just resulted in, you know, a positive upward trend for the market. Now, what's been happening more lately is that earnings season's coming to a close. Most of the large companies have finished reporting their earnings, and that means we have a lack of company-specific data for, you know, arouse traders' attention. And their natural tendency right now is to turn to geopolitical events and to try to make their trades based on that. So in the last couple of weeks, you know, things like what's been going on with the currencies in South Africa and Turkey and Argentina and India has been arousing their attention. You know, our own elections, the collusion investigations, this is the type of attention that's been, you know, the traders have been focusing on right now because there really has been a lack of anything else. But, you know, I would go back to my first comments that, you know, this market is in a solid upward trend. It has been. It's been a messy way to get here. But those who've been ignoring, I think, all this noise have just found it to be a very profitable year.
Well, there has been an awful lot of news in this past week on Turkey and currencies and emerging markets. Ian, is this something we should be worried about as investors?
Well, I think, you know, what's been in the news more recently is the decline in the lira, Turkey's currency, relative to other major world currencies. And the story behind all that is a bit too lengthy for this afternoon. But it has put pressure on emerging markets and their respective currencies overall. It's certainly going to cause some increased day-to-day volatility in the market. And I think back to Greece several summers ago when they were having currency issues. It certainly can put downward pressure on stock markets, whether or not it's directly tied to the lira or Turkey at all. But from the standpoint of our investment client accounts, we don't have any specific exposure to emerging markets, and that's intentional. We've always believed that the risks far outweigh the benefits for the vast majority of our client base. So from a fundamental standpoint, no real impact to our portfolios. Nonetheless, we all are market participants, so we have to put up with the day-to-day volatility that can be increased because of these news items.
Well, Ian, when we see these types of crises develop, whether it's in Greece or the European banks a few years ago, China in 2016, Russia and Turkey today, I mean, how do you respond in dealing with client portfolios?
Well, we certainly don't overreact. And in most of these instances, less is usually more. We have to ask ourselves, does that scary news headline, whatever it may be, whether it's Turkey or Russia or, you know, Greece, as I mentioned many years ago, does it really affect the investments and specifically the fundamentals of the investments that we own? In most cases, these geopolitical events, news headlines, they don't really have an impact on the investments within our clients' portfolios. A simple example is, when something scary happens in some segment of the world, does it have an effect on Chevron's earnings? That's a simple way of thinking about how we approach these things. So We are much more focused on what the companies themselves are actually doing fundamentally, and we tend to ignore some of these news items. But frankly, yes, they can be a bit frightening, and we know that they can create volatility within markets, but we remain focused on the things that matter long term.
Tim, there's been a lot of news about the resumption of the trade war with our current administration.
Right.
How does that impact companies and stock prices? And do you see winners and losers emerging from this trade war?
Well, I see this trade war as something that's continuing on from trends started probably 2010, 2011. That's when the real trade war began around the world, and that's when we had several dozen countries trying to pull themselves simultaneously out of recession, and they did it by borrowing, driving their rates down to zero, cheapening their currencies, anything they could to export, prosperity, in their own nations. And that really hamstrung the United States, versus the U.S. dollar for a number of years. We were actually losing this trade war until probably a couple of years ago. So what's happening right now, you could call it kind of an extension, just trying to, the United States fighting back a little bit. In terms of its impact on companies and stock prices, we're hearing a lot of CEOs weighing in on this issue in conference calls. They're genuinely worried so far, as are their boards, but none of them really have hard and fast numbers as to how it's going to impact them. They just see it as a dark cloud out there that may impact their sales, may impact their profit margins, may impact their earnings in the future. There's been a few companies that are direct importers of, let's say, steel products in China or the Southeast Asia that are already seeing direct impacts, but we have to keep in mind that with all the escalating rhetoric and all the media attention, we're still talking about small numbers. I mean, the latest kind of tariff information out of the Trump administration is that they're going to embark on 25% tariffs, I think, on about $50 billion worth of new goods out of China. When you compare that to the size of our economy and the fact that we're probably churning out $55 to $60 billion worth of goods every day in this country, it's a blip. I mean, the impact on our economy is going to be equal to a couple hours worth of productivity. And, we look at it from that point of view. When we start seeing hard data that confirms that some companies are going to be impacted by this, we'll act accordingly. But so far, it's just been more ifs and ands than anything else. And we also go from the perspective that it's really in no one's interest to keep up this rhetoric and to keep a trade war going. And anytime you slow down trade, everybody gets hurt, both sides of the equation. And it just looks like right now the United States may have the upper hand, and we might get hurt a little bit less than, let's say, China.
Tim, staying with you now, you had mentioned a moment ago that we're maybe 80% through earnings season with the S&P 500. What's your view on how earnings have been looking for this quarter, and what were some of the general themes that you've seen?
I think the main theme that we've done from all these earnings reports is that the economy is firing on a lot more cylinders than it was a year ago. And that's actually been very positive news for investors. It's been positive news for portfolio managers because it really confirms that the growth trends in the economy that started last summer, they've not abated, and in some cases they're building momentum. And I'll give you an example. We follow 100, 150 companies, and most of them have reported so far, and the average revenue growth of those companies has been about 9.5%. And the average operating profit growth has been about 10%. Now, those are really powerful numbers. Those are the strongest growth numbers I've seen out of our collection of companies since about 2011. And we always believe that, good natural things happen to income statements when GDP is growing. So it's feeding on itself. GDP is growing, which translates into more sales, more profits. You add in the fact that companies are buying back their stock aggressively, add in the fact that they've got a big boom in their tax rate from the tax bill that passed last year, and you have just very, very strong earnings momentum that these companies are showing.
Can you give me some specific company examples of this type of earnings growth that you see now?
Sure. I'll give you one from this morning, Home Depot. They reported that the company we've been following and putting portfolios back in 2010 or in 2011, we thought they had several years of good, positive momentum ahead of them with a growing economy. They reported, I think, 8% sales growth this morning, and Home Depot is not building any more stores at the moment. So that 8% is all coming from at the store level where they're getting 5% more customers, each of them buying 3% more goods. That's leading to just outstanding sales growth. They're holding their costs in line. So their pre-tax income, I believe, was up about 10%. And then you couple in the fact that their tax rates have dropped and their earnings just suddenly jumped 35%, and they bought back some stock. So they have every positive momentum factor behind them right now. which is one of the reasons we like them, but they're not alone either. We see companies across the board that are just showing this kind of operating momentum that we'd like to see as an investor. I mean, you look at Apple and Microsoft. They reported a few weeks ago, each of them reported, I think, about 17% sales growth, which are just astounding numbers for companies that are selling, you know, in Microsoft's case, $30 billion per quarter, Apple selling, I think, $52 billion per quarter. And then you look at companies, Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, all showing 20% sales growth, a lot of industrials coming in. So it has been just an extraordinary season. As I said, it's probably the strongest we've seen in probably about 7 years.
Thanks, Tim. Ian, I fear a lot of these companies that are reporting such positive increases in profits, and then their stocks sell off when they make these announcements. Can you explain why this happens?
Sure. Occasionally, companies can be victims of their own success, for lack of a better term. Good results often lead to higher and higher expectations each and every quarter. So companies can post outstanding results, but if they fall below expectations, even slightly, even if it's just a modest miss, you'll notice a short-term sell-off as market participants, investors sort of reset their expectations going forward. So, you know, as investors, we typically avoid trading around some of the short-term price movement. Instead, we try to remain focused on the actual meat of the earnings report itself, the fundamental data points that come out of these earnings reports, and then tie that back to the long-term outlook for the company. Why did we initially invest in it? Is the story still the same? Has anything meaningfully changed because of this earnings announcement? Those are the sorts of things that we look at.
Tim, we've talked about the earnings momentum that these companies are showing and that they've shown for the first half of the year. Do you think this can continue on for the remainder of the year and further out?
Well, yes and no. No to the extent that they just got a big windfall from the tax bill, which lowered their tax rates, lifted their earnings to a new quantum level. Starting at the end of this year, those effects are going to roll off, and suddenly companies are not going to get that big boost from, you know, even further lowers of their tax rate. They're going to still buy back stock. That'll boost their earnings a little bit. They're going to have to rely a lot more on just good old-fashioned sales growth, and that momentum looks to be pretty strong. We're also seeing the U.S. dollar has accelerated. It's moved up against our trading partners' currencies, and that is going to turn into a mild headwind for a few of our multinationals in terms of their sales and operating profits. So the bottom line, as we see it, we've got a lot of companies reporting 20 to 25% earnings growth year over year right now. By the end of the year, that's probably going to factor down closer to 10%, you know, on a year over year basis. Then going into 2019, it's going to be real hard to maintain above 10%. But those are still very good numbers for the ninth year of an economic cycle.
Now, Ian, you and Tim have now both mentioned a lot of positive economic developments going on. Are there any market indicators out there that do give you cause for concern?
Well, sure. So we are fairly optimistic about the broader economy and certainly the companies that we own, as Tim has alluded to in his comments. But as we mentioned at our annual outlook events earlier this year in our different markets, the single greatest risk we see is the resetting of interest rates to higher levels, and then how investors ultimately respond to that. The yield curve, and more specifically the shape of the yield curve, has given us some pause this year as long-term rates have fallen while short-term rates are being increased through Fed policy. So normally in a robust economic environment where GDP is growing at 4+%, you would expect an upward-sloping yield curve where longer-term rates are higher than short-term rates. But instead, the yield curve is relatively flat today. So, you know, the bond market is telling us something that we have to pay attention to. It's certainly not something we're being overly alarmed about at this point, but if we continue to see flattening in the yield curve to the point that it inverts or becomes a negative slope, that's usually a sign of a slowing economy.
Ian, are there strategies that are working better than others right now in the moment? And it seems like the technology stocks maybe are outperforming the market in general.
Yeah, certainly technology has had a terrific run, really extending back to 2017. Most of 2017 was particularly strong for tech. That's continued this year. But beyond just tech, really the growth segment of the stock market has performed exceedingly well, extending again back 18 to 24 months at this point. And you can parse the market out in many different ways, but the Lipper large cap growth and value, they do a nice job of just parsing out the broader stock market into those two buckets between growth and value. And the growth segment's up over 13% this year, in 2018 alone, value is up 2.5% this year. So you can see the huge divergence between, you know, similar sorts of companies, large multinational U.S. companies. But the companies that are growing faster are being bid up higher. You've got other companies that are equally great companies. Take a Johnson & Johnson or a Procter & Gamble that are much more mature in their business cycle, that buy back stock, raise their dividends, maybe won't be growing as fast as an Amazon or a Facebook. But nonetheless, terrific companies, they are not being rewarded by the market this year. So the important thing is we try to incorporate all of these elements when we're building a portfolio: growth, value, dividends, momentum, so that we're well represented across sectors and industries. Because we realize that there's always some reversion to the mean, whether it's between growth or value or momentum or dividends. So we want to be exposed reasonably to all those areas, because we know you don't really ever know when a particular area of the market's going to really take off relative to another.
So, Tim, we talked about tech there. Are there any other sectors of the market that you're seeing trends favorably or unfavorably on? Anything you'd want to talk about there?
Well, I think you just covered it all. You know, very excellent answer. We've been seeing really a dichotomy in the market since 2016 between growth stock, value stock, between stocks paying no dividends and growing fast and stocks paying high dividends and not growing at all. And that's just continued into this year. As Ian mentioned, technology, information technology stocks, I think they're up about 16% through yesterday, and they're pretty much carrying the S&P 500. You take out the leading tech names, you know, the Apple, the Facebook, the Amazon, and such, and the S&P 500 is close to flat for the year, and most stocks are flat to possibly down, you know, just a fraction on average. So you have a 500 stock index, you know, really being led by 8 large cap companies. And why? Because they're growing the fastest. They're the largest companies, they're growing the fastest, investors have the most comfort level with them, and they're expected to keep on growing. Now you take other sectors like healthcare, that's probably been the second strongest sector of the market this year. I think the average stock in healthcare is probably up 8 to 9%. That includes a lot of drug companies, of course. But if you go to the other side of the equation, industrials, financials, the types of cyclicals that you think are going to be an indicator of a economy powering upward, they're flat to down slightly this year. And I think there's some worries there that rising interest rates might eat into their profits. There's worries about rising raw materials costs as a result of trade wars cutting into the margins of these businesses. So it has been a kind of a market that's cleaved in two directions, you know, winners and losers. And as Ian said, the trick is not to try to time these sectors. It's to have enough of all of them in your basket at any one time so you're just fully participating in what the market's throwing at you.
Okay. So, Ian, in the latest newsletter, you suggested that there would be 2 more interest hikes this year, and you said that stocks still offered the most compelling returns. Are you still forecasting in that same way?
Yeah, so market participants, investors, are still expecting 2 more rate hikes in 2018. The September rate hike is pretty much already priced in. The December rate hike, a little bit less so, but the odds are that they will make a move in December. But that's a little bit more speculative at this point. But so we'll just continue to watch those movements. And then again, just tying it back to the yield curve statement that I made before, that's really what we're going to have to watch is as these Fed policy decisions get made, how do investors respond, and then what happens to the yield curve in response to that? So do we get more flattening? Perhaps longer-term rates tend to move up, and we get that upward slope that we'd like to see in a strong economy. So we're going to continue to watch that.
Well, staying with you, Ian, so if we assume these rate hikes do come through, how's that going to impact stock and bond values? And is there a point when interest rates rising creates an impetus to look at an investor's asset allocation and consider making a change?
Sure. I mean, first off, it's always a trade-off for us. I mean, for years, stocks offered a much better risk-adjusted return than bonds, and so we allocated much more heavily to stocks as a result. So if you've been 100% in stocks the last 10 to 12 years, you've been pretty happy. There will come a time where bonds are going to offer a compelling alternative for a total return portfolio. We're not there yet. Interest rates are still very low. But it's always a discussion that should be had with your portfolio manager. Certainly, if rates continue to rise, it will start to make more sense to carve out a portion of your portfolio for bonds, particularly for clients that are living off their portfolios, that are drawing income on a regular basis. So we're still, I think, a little ways off from us advocating heavily for bonds, but it's not going to be a flip of the switch either. I don't anticipate interest rates, doing what they're going to do over the next 5 years in 1 month, and we're not going to change our asset allocation in one day. It's going to be an ongoing discussion tied back to the individual client's return goals and their comfort level with risk, and then we'll make changes as appropriate.
Okay. So, Tim, how do you feel about the economy right now, the strength that it's there, and in your view, can it stay this strong?
Well, Wes, we've had 2 or 3 quarters now where growth has been averaging in our economy 3% plus, and when you look at the numbers and really parse them, it's no fluke. Those 3% numbers were for real. They weren't influenced by weather. They weren't influenced by a sudden spurt in exports or anything unnatural. It was caused by just building momentum within the economy. And I'll use the example. I was listening to an earnings conference call last week of Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan, and he was asked the same question. Of course, heading J.P. Morgan, he'd be one of the chief risk officers in the United States, and he just charted off a litany of positive things that are happening in our economy that all bode really well for financial markets going forward. Consumers are in great shape. The balance sheets of corporations and of banks and of consumers are in excellent condition right now. Lending across the spectrum in the United States is very sensible and it's growing. Capital expenditures from businesses are starting to pick up. A lot of that due to the tax rates being dropped for these companies. People are going back to work. Wages are rising. The unemployment rate is near a 50-year low right now. When you look at shipping data from railroads and trucking companies, that confirms that more goods are moving back and forth within the economy. It's hard to see negatives out there, and it really tells us that these 3% numbers at least can be sustained through the end of the year.
Well, with all of that positive economic growth and enthusiasm, do you feel like there are any bubbles forming in the economy or in any particular parts of the financial market?
Well, that's an excellent question. You're always going to look for bubbles where you can because you never know when they're going to occur. But bubbles occur in the economy when you have industries that are overproducing. You think back to the tech industry and laying of fiber optic cables, 15 years ago. You can think back to the oil and gas industry and the overbuilding of pipelines and refineries 4 and 5 years ago. And you can think of our housing industry building 2 million homes a year when we only needed 1 million, 10 years ago. We're looking for that kind of excessive overproduction. We just don't see it in a lot of industries. We hardly see it anywhere. We actually have housing shortages right now. We still have industries that are not running at full capacity. And that tells us that, the types of bubbles that normally create recessionary conditions aren't out there. We also look at lending conditions. What are banks doing? Are they being prudent? Are they being excessive in imprudent lending? We don't see any evidence of that. And bankers will tell you that they're being as conservative as they've been in the last 20 years, and certainly regulators have had a say in that. So, if we're looking at typical actions that can cause recessions or bubbles to pop, they're not out there right now. And I think that's why the market is being enthusiastic as it is. Certainly there's 800-pound gorillas out there. The amount of debt that governments around the world took on after the 2008-2009 crisis are enormous. It may come to roost in the next recession. We may see a blowout of budget deficits again across the world if and when a recession comes, but there's nothing on the immediate horizon.
Okay. So, Ian, referring back to some of the earlier comments about technology stocks and reflecting on Tim's idea that maybe a handful of technology stocks have produced the greatest portion of the return in the S&P 500. Are you still favoring tech stocks like Facebook and Google and PayPal?
Sure, we are. I mean, as a part of a well-diversified portfolio, the names you just mentioned are certainly still some of our favorites within the technology space. The one thing that these companies that you mentioned, Facebook, Google, PayPal, they all have in common is that they're growing at double-digit rates, but they're also trading at very reasonable valuation levels. So we're happy to continue to own them, continue to purchase them where appropriate. I'll mention Facebook certainly had a bit of a tough quarter. They traded down pretty significantly following their earnings announcement when they announced that they were going to be spending a little bit more than anticipated to increase that privacy and protection. And so that's going to impact margins going forward a little bit more than what was anticipated. But, let's use Facebook as an example. You're still looking at a company that's going to grow at double-digit rates over the next several years, and they're trading at a very reasonable multiple when you couple that with their growth expectations. So in a world where I think we all would agree that stocks are not ridiculously undervalued today, when you can find a compelling growth story and not pay too much for it, that seems like a good place to invest.
Sometimes finding that story is difficult with all of the news that's out there, and every time I pick up the paper or turn on the TV, somebody wants to tell me about Tesla and what's going on there. Tim, is it a buy now?
Well, when it comes to Tesla, I think we're going to sit on the sidelines, watch, and perhaps laugh a little bit at the situation that's unfolding. We have different perspectives on Tesla, and we have not owned auto companies in our portfolios really since inception. They're just too cyclically inclined for us. Very capital-intensive industries that require a lot of debt and equity issuance to get you through the ups and downs of cash flows of a business cycle. And we've known for a long time that the odds have been against Tesla staying profitable long-term. It just doesn't happen in the auto industry. So that has been a reason for us to give pause and look for other tech stocks that are actually growing, you know, at a strong rate. What's happening lately is going to be a textbook conundrum, I think, and it'll be studied for a long time in terms of whether or not this company goes private. It's interesting to me that if and when Tesla does go private, Elon Musk now will have to face some very critical shareholders who are going to ask hard questions as to when you're going to produce positive returns on equity, when you're going to produce positive returns on invested capital, positive cash flows, positive operating profits from the company, because they're non-existent right now. And this company has diluted its shareholders by about 70% the last couple of years. It's tripled its bonds outstanding the last 3 years, I think. And yet this stock has been bid up almost to its all-time high by a group of very enthusiastic, faithful public shareholders who I think he really needs, you know, to keep this business viable. So it's a conundrum for Elon Musk, and as I intimated, it's going to be a conundrum that we're not going to have to face.
Okay. So, Ian, in the communications area, there's some widely held popular stocks, AT&T and Verizon, and boy, their yields are very attractive. But why have their stock prices come down a little bit lately?
Well, yeah, first of all, AT&T and Verizon, we're still happy to own. We're still purchasing AT&T. They're currently yielding over 6% at this point. Verizon's right at 4.5%. So if the stock price just stays where it is for the next, well, indefinitely, and they keep paying their dividend and or raising it over time, it's going to be a sound investment. I think the reason that it's traded down, you know, telecom in general has become more and more commoditized over the years. You've got Sprint and T-Mobile taking market share. And I think, you know, the competitive strength that Verizon used to have with their superior network, people are caring less and less about over time as the LTE networks become faster and faster. It matters a little bit less who your provider is. So we've seen some resetting in those forward expectations, but still the dividend yields that these companies are offering, particularly for our clients that are living off their portfolios that need income, these investments I think still make sense.
You know, Ian, we really haven't touched on energy and oil prices. What's your current take on what's going on in the energy patch?
Yeah, so as Tim mentioned, we've received earnings announcements on most companies at this point. I can tell you that most of our energy positions did quite well this quarter. Oil has kind of settled in that $70 range, which is a really good long-term number for a lot of these companies. They can operate very profitably at $70 oil. So Chevron and Royal Dutch had nice reports, reaffirming forward guidance, and their dividends are certainly intact and safe. And, you know, we've come a long way from when oil went from 130 down to 30 bucks a barrel, and that was a tough time for everyone. But these companies are certainly posting very strong results, which is not hard to expect when you consider that oil's made a nice rebound. In terms of forward expectations, you know, we don't speculate on where oil is going to be 1 year from now. We just try to have a reasonable basis for investment. We want to know that these companies that we own are going to be continuing to produce and to grow and also support that dividend long-term. And we think they're in good shape. And I would also incorporate the segment of our clients that have master limited partnerships, which are also tied to energy. Those continue to produce very strong results as well.
All right. Ian, we're winding down to the last couple of questions. I've read lately about some changes that are going to happen in the way stocks within the S&P 500 are going to be sorted sometime coming up in the future. Can you comment on this reconstitution and what that's going to mean?
Yeah, sure. So in September, the S&P 500, which is just a broad measure of U.S. stocks, they're going to be shifting around their sector classifications, essentially expanding what is today the telecom sector, which is made up predominantly of Verizon and AT&T today. They're going to be renaming it the communications services sector, and they're going to be adding names to it like Google and Facebook. Those are two notable tech names that will be moved over. You've also got some consumer companies like Disney, Comcast, Netflix, Twitter that are going to become a part of this new sector. So I think it's just in response to the fact that technology as a standalone sector is roughly 25% of the S&P 500 at this point. This is a way to, I think, more clearly define what sort of businesses make up these different sectors. So I think you may see some interesting trading going on September 21st, as a lot of these sector ETFs have to sort of rebalance themselves. There's probably going to be some large flows, but that'll be a very transient short-term issue.
Okay. So, Tim, we're 8-9 months now into a corporate tax rate change, an individual tax rate change. Are we doing anything different in light of the tax bill and working with the clients?
Well, one of the things we are doing is alerting clients as to the fact that they need to consult with their CPAs. They need to do pro forma estimates of their 2018 taxes to see if they're falling into higher or lower rates going forward, and then we'll manage from there. Certainly, we're in a situation where 9 years into a bull market, and these clients are 9 years older now than when the bull market started. Certainly, they have a lot of appreciated stocks. We have to think about estate plans, a lot more. We've had some changes, big changes in the estate tax exemption amounts. We've had kind of tweaking of the edges of brackets. The capital gains dividend rates are staying the same at the same kind of level, 0%, 15, 20, depending on adjusted gross income is coming in at. So this is the time of year, if you haven't done it yet, come and talk to us and or your CPA, and let's start talking through whether or not we need to do some planning, for this year and going forward.
I think that's a great idea, Tim. So all of us at the Sanibel Captiva Trust Company and its divisions, the Naples Trust Company and Tampa Bay Trust Company, thank you for joining us on today's call. If you'd like to keep the conversation going, our investment experts are happy to visit with you at your convenience. Have a pleasant evening.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.